Welcome to our podcast. Oh, you can look for exits, but there aren't any. Consider this your podcast of no return. So you might as well sit back and relax while you listen to tales of the odd, weird, unexplained, and just plain creepy. But beware, you never know what's lurking around each and every corner. Now here are your hosts, Todd and Sean. And they are middle-aged and creeped out.
Hello there, creepies. Welcome to episode 18. Nate is our sound engineer, and we are your hosts, Todd and Sean. And we are middle-aged and creeped out. Sean, what's going on, man?
Nothing too much, brother. How you doing?
Finally getting back at it after 3 weeks. What do you think?
We have so much pent up in energy from having these vacations, you know, and we couldn't help but kind of like still talk through text and messenger.
Oh yeah.
But it's like one of those things where we got here and I'm thinking, oh, I'm ready for this. I'm more than ready.
Right. So right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I walked in, I saw Nate. I'm like, are we recording? I heard there's a recording session going on.
I hope I remember how to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do we do?
Do I type in?
Or what do we do when we get together?
Yeah. Yeah. No, the vacations were, they were fun. Mm-hmm. We all back to back.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Tybee. Where? Columbus?
No, not Columbus. Sandusky.
Sandusky. Yep. Sandusky.
Baseball and then Cedar Point.
Yeah. And Nate?
Lake Cumberland.
With the RV, like the camper?
No, we stayed down there.
Oh, did?
Grandparents.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. For some reason, I thought you took your...
Nope, not down to the lake.
Okay.
We have plenty of beds.
Plenty of beds there?
That's yeah. Your dementia setting in there, Todd. Sorry.
Who are you guys again?
What? Have we met?
Yeah, I'm 150, not 50. No, it's great. I'm like, oh, man, it's been a long time. Wasn't that long, but long enough.
No, I know. Yeah.
So
we missed a lot of good weather we could have talked about and a lot of, no.
I know.
Chiropractor appointments that we missed. And
you know, the usual. Yeah.
The huge.
Yeah. No, I'm, yeah, you guys, so you guys are good.
Mm-hmm. Doing good.
Work's doing all right.
Yeah, work's good. Work's been busy for me. It's been kind of crazy, but it's, yeah. I'm trying really hard to focus on doing good work and helping people and just being as flexible as I can, knowing I can't get to everything. And it helps. And then I work with wonderful people. They know who they are. And
yeah.
I love it. I wouldn't do this if this wasn't fun and I didn't enjoy being with you guys. Same thing at work. If I didn't enjoy what I do and with the people I do it with, I wouldn't want to do it.
What's the point?
Yep. Exactly. Right. So,
good.
It's good.
And Nate, you're back on days.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Night shift's over.
No, so more night good. Shift. Thank God.
No, but you're still at the Banker's Life, or is that
no?
You're done with that.
Sort of light on work, so I'm in hold pattern again.
Oh, okay.
So I'll be spending some time at the house.
Oh,
you saw him. He's already got
that laugh. That's like, yeah.
He's got a honeydew list. He was working
back
on
back at the house. A little bit.
I got here a little before you, and it was like he was working on his honeydew list. And I'm like, I feel like I should be helping. What can I do to help?
Yeah. Nate's like, hey, it's okay.
Well, we had all the hardwoods refinished and sanded down,
and it looks amazing.
So it does. It looks good.
Great. Yeah.
Getting
real good.
Getting it all cleaned up again.
Cool. So
very dusty.
Cool. That's how it goes. Yeah. Well, awesome. Well, we are glad to be back at it, and this is, episode 18.
That is crazy.
I know.
It's crazy to look at that number. It just keeps going up. It's been up and up.
I know.
Crazy to look at the numbers of listeners, too.
I know.
Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for boosting us up to, we're approaching, what, 5,000?
5,000, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll seem like a drop in a bucket someday, but to
if you would have told me we'd have 5,000 downloads by sometime in July, I'm like, yeah, that's okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've said before, I think I said on the Facebook post, I thought if we have like two people,
yeah,
know,
two or three, yeah,
maybe 10 downloads total.
Mm. We would have been ecstatic.
We're good. You know, we get to still get together, talk, mm-hmm, and hang 5, out.
5,000 feels like Mount Everest.
Are you kidding
like
me?
We're climbing Mount Everest, and it's
unbelievable.
But it's easy. Yeah. Like it's been so effortless.
The Facebook group and Instagram, you guys are, you know, following us and
interacting. We love that too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Love the interacting. So keep
being a bright part of people's lives. Yeah. And it's fun.
Awesome. Well, you know what? I'm going to turn it over to Sean, and he's going to kind of give you a little idea of what we're going to be talking about this episode.
Now, I can't tell too much because it is super, super duper secret, and you're going to hear it in just a minute. But we have just done, it was our first interview, we did a couple interviews this afternoon, and he was our first interview. It is, and I'm not even joking, like I joke around a lot. That's what I do. That's how I cope. But when I'm joking, when I'm saying this, I'm not joking that this is a super interesting, let's say interesting to start with, but a very intense interview that we did. And I didn't know how it was going to go, how I was going to take it. But we learned a lot. I mean, I think we just, it was really in our face. But I am so glad we did it. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. So without any further ado, enjoy this interview.
Hey guys, we have a very special guest on our show. His name is M.R. Gorga, and he is a best-selling author of the book Demons Among Us. M.R., welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. We're excited for you. I'll let Nate and Sean say hello.
Hey, M.R.
Hello.
Hello.
So, we could not be more excited to have you on. And like we were talking before we started recording, you know, Sean's got the book. I want to get the book. I don't have a lot of time to read, unfortunately. So that's
no excuse.
Why
no
I know
excuse.
I know there are all these books I want to read and I have no time, but that's one of them I should and I want to, so I will definitely be ordering that soon.
And I know we're going to talk about it too, and we don't want to give away too much of it, but it is, and I was just telling MR that as well, I got it and I've been reading it on my downtime and I love it. It is written exceptionally great. And I read a lot, and I sometimes will have, you know, 4, 5, 6 books going. And it's right now my go-to, where it's my guilty pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on, sir. And I guess before we start, you know, do you want to just kind of tell the listeners a little bit about your background or, you know, and then we can kind of get into the book and let you tell your story?
Sure. Well, I've been a writer basically all my life. I mean, it was first recognized in fourth grade by my teacher when I wrote some horror story. And I thought I was going to get in trouble for it when he called my parents, and I thought I was going to get in trouble for it. But instead, he's like, you know, your son has a real gift for writing. You need to sign him up for the Young Authors Club right away.
That's
and
so cool.
Ever since then, I've always been writing in some form or fashion. I've started in journalism and in magazines and, went on to marketing and advertising, copywriting, and now I'm the author of Demons Among Us, and I'm looking to scare the pants off your audience.
The front of it will scare the pants off of you just looking at it. And I actually,
I've had
it sitting in my office at the hospital I work in our office, and the people will look and they're like, what in the world are you reading? I'm like, you have to read it. It is so good.
Yeah.
And it is, but they're like, what is that on the front? I'm like, it's a demon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. It's very scary.
It grabs you right off the bat. You kind of know what's going on.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm hearing a lot about the cover. I'm hearing some surprising things, and people are actually so freaked out by the cover that they turn it over at night so they don't get afraid, so their kids don't get afraid. Someone even said they hide it in their dresser drawer because it freaks them out too much at night.
It's funny because you say that. I've done that at my desk to turn it over because it does, not so much freaks me out, but freaks other people out.
Yeah.
I was like, just so people, you know, but I also want to talk to them about it too. So it's funny, but it's a representation of a demon you actually saw. Is that correct? Or
yes, it's something that was, an entity that I've seen and, that had, and we'll get to it, I'm sure, as we get into the podcast. But that was just one of the demonic entities that I've seen along the way. I've seen and dealt with a lot of demonic attacks and night assaults and things of that nature. And that was just one of the representations that I've seen. And I tried to convey it to the best of my ability to my cover artist, who did an amazing job. But when we're talking about very, very spiritual things and trying to convey them into the natural, they come close, but you can't still capture the actual, you know, representation.
Horrifying nature, right? Yeah. And that, I mean, that probably spooks you too to look at it. Honestly, we're talking about everybody else, but you probably look at it and kind of get the chills, I bet.
Say that again?
I said you probably get the chills too, just like anybody else looking at that cover.
Oh yeah, it's funny because it never gets old. You know, yeah. I've had this idea in mind for this cover for so long, and I actually have my first mock-up that I used to show my cover artist, and that was like 3 years ago, and three and change years ago, and it never gets old, and it never gets not freaky.
Yeah. I can see that. And just knowing the story behind it, it's not just a made-up image. I mean, it's something that you saw, and that's your depiction mm-hmm. of it. Just makes it even more creepier.
Yeah.
A real-life experience, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the actual representation, like you said. Yeah, that's... Yeah, MRI showed my wife. I said, this is who we're having on our show, you know, tomorrow night. And so I showed her a picture of you, and next to you was the cover, and she was like, oh yeah, you know, when she saw your picture, and then when she saw the cover, she goes, oh
yeah,
like instant, yeah,
yep.
I said, yeah, that's pretty intense, isn't it?
Well, it's scaring people everywhere to see the cover, so she's not alone,
right? So let's go ahead and have you get into, you know, your experiences and kind of how all this started, as far as, and then like what, you know, as far as inspired you to write this book.
Right. Well, the reason why I wrote this book, it was a series of, it was like a week long or 2 weeks long of just nightly demonic assaults. And I'm talking about nighttime strangulations.
Oh, man.
I'm talking about chest suppression that someone would call, you know, sleep paralysis, but that's not what it is, because it comes with such ungodly fear and darkness.
Yeah.
You really feel something enter the room. It comes with, you know, evil whisperings, bitings, and like, you know, you feel scratchings like on your arms and legs. And so it was really my answer to the demonic realm, to expose those things that are happening all around us in the spiritual realm. My goal is to open the eyes of people, just to let them know that there are things, evil things, functioning and operating all around them, whether they see it or not. And so that was my cause for the book. And one of the main instances too was, and I talk about this in the introduction, I'm a prayer leader at a church, and so at one of the meetings that we had, we were all in a circle, and during these times of attacks, and I said, is anybody else experiencing these kinds of things at night? And one by one, hands went up, and all in all, 13 people raised their hands. They were all experiencing these demonic attacks at night.
That's wild.
And yeah, and it angered me.
Right, absolutely.
It angered me in the sense because, you know, everybody thought they were in this boat alone, and nobody wanted to say anything because they thought someone would call them crazy.
Right.
And, you know, so, and this was, Demons Among Us is my answer to those attacks, because I really just wanted to, you know, throw a punch back into the demonic realm, and this is what Demons Among Us is about.
MR, I think that, and I mean, I know this goes without saying, but with this, it takes so much courage to do this. That's why I'm half like intimidated to talk about this stuff, but when I'm reading your book and when I'm trying to think about this, it has to be talked about. That's part of what we're doing on this podcast, is trying to make a, you know, you talk about safe spaces, but spaces where people can share their experiences and it doesn't feel so odd or weird or like, you know, nobody needs to talk about it. You're absolutely right. There are people out there, more people than I've ever known, that have all these kind of experiences. But when you're talking about demonic presences, that's serious business. I mean, we're talking about our souls, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I believe these kind of experiences are more common than we actually think. It's just that people don't want to speak up about it because, you know, again, they'll be called crazy or you're nuts or, you know, all kinds of other, you know, tags you want to put on somebody. But these experiences have been happening since the dawn of time. And I put a quote in there from a Chinese philosopher right in the beginning of the book, and he nailed it all right on the head. He says that since the beginning of time, men have been seeing spirits and hearing voices. How then can we say that they don't exist? So we're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of years of people experiencing these kinds of experiences, and it's against all calculated odds that all these people are crazy.
Right, and it's ancient, yeah.
Yeah, there's something there, and it's always been there. And
I think society itself sort of looks at like ghosts and spirits as more of a taboo rather than they, you know, these entities exist and they are real and they're here, but
it's
very taboo in society.
Well, today we try to, you know, we try to psychoanalyze it away in psychiatry, psychiatrics, and drugs and try to medicate it away. Try as you might, you're not getting rid of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Medicine's not going to get away or, you know, make a demon go away. And,
right.
And, you know, in my opinion, you know, people, I think some of the people that they do believe in it, but they don't want to acknowledge it. They want to just ignore it, hoping it's going to go away. And that's not how it works. That's not how it works.
I'm sorry, you'll break it up again.
Oh, no, I was just saying that, you know, just saying that it people think that if they ignore it, it's going to go away. And that's not how it works. It's just not going to go away because they don't want, I mean, you know, they believe it, but they just think, well, if I close my eyes and close my ears, then it's gone.
But, right. Yeah. No, it doesn't work. The demonic realm, it's a spiritual realm, and it doesn't work that way.
Right. All right.
I was curious, MR, how old were you when you had your first experience? Like, what are we talking, like a kid or a teenager?
I have two answers for that.
Yeah.
And the first is, yeah, I have, as a child, I was about 4 or 5, and was an experience that happened when my family and we lived up in New Jersey. And the story goes that we had a laundry room on the first floor. It was a 2-story house, and on that first floor, and out of the laundry room came this white hand, this large white hand, and it came out at my sister's. And I remember them coming out by that laundry room screaming and running up the steps, and they told my parents it was this white ghostly hand that came out after them. Now, part of the story, I'm not, you know, I just remember them running up the stairs like two maniacs, right? And so I'm part of that story. So that's been like a story that's been in the family for, you know, for many, many years.
Right.
But the first adult experience was I had just became a believer in Jesus Christ, and it was shortly after... After that, it was actually one of the first times I, you know, tried to pray. I didn't know anything about prayer or anything of that nature. And I was like, all right, let me give this prayer thing a shot. And while I was in prayer, I felt something behind me. And it was almost as if, like, you know, when you there's something behind you and you scrunch your shoulder to your ear, like just to shirk something away or to, you know, so I scrunched my shoulder to my ear. I knew something was back there, and I just didn't want to turn around.
Hmm. Oh,
and as I'm there, I hear a voice behind me says, "You may have gone to God, but you belong to me. I'm never going to let you go. I'm never going to let you go. You will always be mine."
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
That is so spooky.
I can't even comprehend that. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. And so that was the first encounter. And it wasn't a monster's voice. It wasn't anything gravelly or growly or anything that you see in Hollywood. In fact, the voice was so silvery and princely, even regal.
Oh, wow.
That it was believable, but you could sense the undercurrent of evil beneath those words.
Oh.
And that was what the voice was like.
Wow.
I've got goosebumps.
Not really.
I mean, it's really intense. Yeah. That's very, very intense. Yeah. Man. So, you know, I and Nate and Sean, we're believers in Christ. We're Christians, and I'm of the opinion that, you know, once we proclaim our faith in Christ, then it's game on for the demonic. I believe stronger than somebody that's not, in my opinion, you know. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I was gonna, one of the things, as you're getting into more of a, like what Todd's saying, he's getting into more religious aspect. It is one of the things I want to talk about is how do people get into like being attracted to these things? Cause it seems like sometimes it's like of no fault of your own or just that it's your religious background or, you know, how does it, you know, somebody gets involved with magic or voodoo or the dark arts mm-hmm. when they're, you know, seen as a light being or somebody that believes, you know, in Jesus or believes in God and is trying to do all the right things. How do you think that happens?
If I understand the question correctly, I think in my case it was my very first instance of I was newly a brand new believer, a brand new follower. I knew absolutely nothing at the time, so we can't say this that I was just hearing through the lens of religion.
Sure.
I didn't know jack squat at the time.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Genesis 1 in the beginning. I didn't even know that. So we can't say in my instance that this was, well, he's just looking through the lens of religion. And no, it was nothing like that. It was purely experiential. And it was a purely evil voice, demonic, whether it was the voice of actual Satan or a demon, I don't know. But in my case, it was, you know, it couldn't have been seen through the lens of religion because I really didn't have any at that time.
Right.
So that was not my perspective. Now, the book itself, after all these years, I obviously have, you know, grown in knowledge and in faith and in understanding and in wisdom and all that stuff. And it is written through the lens which I see through. Like anybody else would write a book through the lens that they see through. And that's
right.
That's how Demons Among Us is written. But it's written in a way that, you know, even if you're not a believer, you'll be able to understand these concepts, hopefully.
Right.
Yeah.
MR, how many entities have you had run-ins with? Like, or do you believe how many have attacked you at some point?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up again.
That's okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You're breaking up a little.
No, I was just saying, how many entities do you believe, or how many demons do you believe that has gone on the attack against you, or how many have you figured out how many have?
No, I never actually counted, but it's quite a lot. You know, I've been a follower for 26 years now at this point, and so along the way, you know, you're always going to encounter these things, especially when you grow in faith or understanding, or when you go higher in ministry, or you do a greater work for the kingdom of God. You're always going to come under an assault or an attack, and a lot of times it happens when you increase your determination for God, or you grow in, you know, in faith and things of that nature. So these attacks come to kind of frustrate you on the, you know, on this journey.
Sure.
And yeah, I don't have an exact number. I just know that there's been a lot. I talk about some of the, you know, the most, you know, memorable ones.
Do they ever, and see, like I said, Sean's reading the book, I have not yet, but do they usually go by name? Do they
reveal their names or who they are or what their rank is, I guess, because I guess there's a rank in demons. You know, there's, you got your higher ranking ones and you got your little soldiers, I guess, if you want to call them that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yes, they all have names. You know, like you have a name, I have a name, right. You know, they all have names. So they all have names, but they're better known by their function or what their role is. And here's where people probably have had, most have not even thought about this in any way, shape, or form, but they come in various types of evil and forms in regards that, say, fear, the spirit of fear.
Right.
Sure.
The spirit of suicide, the spirit of murder, depression, the spirit of greed, the spirit, you know, so they come in like, you know, in the form of how they try to steal, kill, and destroy. And they're known more by what they do, because they typically don't reveal their names, but they're, you know, they come in various forms of spirits of how they function, the function of that entity.
Right. Yeah. I never thought about, yeah, one demon maybe being the depression or
that's really heavy. I mean, really just what when you think about it,
like specialists. Yeah. 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 And that's scary.
Well, yeah, well, if we could take an example from the Bible, and I'm sure you know this story, when Judas betrayed Jesus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, Judas had a greed problem because he was entrusted with the treasury box, the money,
right,
at the time. And he would take money... Imagine this. He would take money from the box that Jesus was entrusting him to keep for his ministry, right? Not like Jesus didn't know he was taking money.
Right.
But so he's taking money, and by the time he betrays him, and Jesus says, well, do whatever you're going to do, do quickly, and then Satan entered it. Well, it was because of that doorway of greed, Satan had a stronghold to move into Judas to animate him to betray the Son of God, right? So it was, so in essence, there was that greed was functioning to, you know, to destroy. Man.
My thing with, as far as it goes, I mean, as a kid, I know I grew up in thinking like good and evil, and you think of that, and even like, you know, in when we think about superheroes, you know, good's always going to win out, and evil's going to, you know, it might fight and to the death throes, but it's going to not win. So I grew up with that kind of mentality, and as you get older, you start wondering, well, is it really, you know, are the stories of fallen angels real? Is it myth? Is it allegory? And as I'm getting older, and especially seeing what things are going on the world stage today, I have more and more people saying, I think it's good versus evil. And I'm like, you know, like I always try to think, oh, I'm an adult. I think above that. But it's like, I think it's good versus evil, dark versus light. And, you know, in your book coming out and talking about these things and lighting and putting light on it, it really, I think it's helping more people than you have any idea, you know, which, yep, I think is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right, because for many years, when you have a country in, you know, great wealth and great ease and great luxury, it's really hard to see, it's really hard to see the evil hit itself.
Right.
Right. And now what you're starting to see is it's flat out in your face. And I talk about in the book, in the middle section of, how you can know and see the tools and the weapons that they use to infiltrate society, mm-hmm, to get them to sway people towards evil ideologies and evil ideas. But now what you're seeing, you know, in politics and media and comedy and the like and cartoons and everything is an all out assault of evil. And you would have to be absolutely blind these days. You don't even have to be a believer.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
It's so blatant and so obvious. If you can't see it, but God help you, you're blind. But And that's why I read the book, so that, you know, the eyes, people would have, be open and have understanding. And in some of the ways, I'll just go into some of the ways that, that evil operates, since we're talking about that. Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Well, evil, the forces of darkness and evil, they work through people. So they're not going to show up like hairy monsters and say, "Hey, I'm evil." And that would be too obvious, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they need people to perpetuate and to accomplish evil goals and, you know, sinister schemes. And one of the ways, and this is very, very obvious these days, is through media. The media is a tool in which is used to sway the minds of people towards, you know, satanic and demonic and evil ideologies, a brainwashing, if you will.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But it's designed to sway you. And, you know, in biblically speaking, it says the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. And that word sway means gentle persuasion. So people are being lulled into thinking things that were once, you know, considered abominable or taboo. You start to see people saying, "Well, you know what? Maybe that's not so bad."
Right.
Maybe that's not so bad. And that's the argument. And so, and that's why the media is used as a bombardment to kind of soften the stance or somebody's soften somebody's stance against these kind of ideals.
It's like a gradual acquiescence, right? Society.
And so media is a great weapon, powerful mm-hmm. weapon in the hands of evil, and also a surprising one. Let me just talk about it. Another one is politics.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
And I think that's apparently obvious. Is it not obvious like right
oh
now?
My, yeah. Oh, yeah. Blatantly, oh, right? Yep.
Every day.
Right. Exactly. So if you can look at evil and the realm, the spiritual realm, as, you know, as its own government, right? So it has a head, which is Lucifer, and it has all of these demonic offices around it, and they operate like, you know, like a government, and they operate like an army.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an army because it's the forces of darkness, right?
Right.
And mm-hmm. and so if I was a smart devil, or if I was a smart Satan or Lucifer, I would try to infiltrate the mind of the most powerful people in government. And if you can think about it like influencer marketing, in influencer marketing, you get an influencer and then he influences the audience to buy the product or service, right?
Yep. Right.
And this is exactly what's happening, you know, in high offices of government.
Right.
And so, you know, the devil's a smart, you know, the Lucifer is a smart demon. So yes, he's going to try to, influence the most powerful people in politics
mm-hmm.
and in, you know, heads of government, authorities, presidents, judges, politicians, lawmakers. And we see that, you know, alive and well today. And the surprising one is comedy. He uses comedy to soften the blow, or comedy was used to soften the blow of something that's very, something that's distasteful, or it's used to sway or bully the views of others to their view. And I have no better example than the Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Trump presidency, what you saw was like the manifestation of evil on all these fronts. And the way I see it, this is why there was so much heated attack against one man, is because you were seeing the elevation or the escalation of evil in the society. And, you know, in comedy, And out of the 29 times comedy is mentioned in the Bible, only two talk about, you know, out of happiness or merriment. The other one is mocking, scorn, and derision.
Correct,
so
right.
Comedy is a very, very surprising tool in the hand of the enemy in the demonic realm. And it's used to influence, again, to sway them over to evil ideals and ideologies.
Yeah. The devil is not dumb. That's for sure.
That's
and
right.
he's going to use whatever
strategy,
he can.
Right?
Yeah, he's a very good strategist. That's for sure. And I never thought about the comedy aspect, and that makes complete sense. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I'm letting you talk, because that's fascinating viewpoint.
That's why I have it in the book, because it's such a surprising thing. They like, well, use comedy. And I talk about, you know, I give the example in the middle of the book, and I use Archie Bunker.
Right.
And so it's, you know, you'll be able to, and when you see these things operating and functioning in society, you know that evil is at work. So anything that's trying to be promoted through these three things, and there are other ones that they're used, but these are the three biggies. When you see anything trying to be pushed, promoted, or anything of that at a forceful level through these three avenues, you know that something is at work.
Right. Mm-hmm. It makes me think of The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you've watched that. I know that's been a big discussion amongst a lot of people. But The Social Dilemma, they end up talking about how when you think, you know, there's nothing else, everything's free, and all these things that we're being quote-unquote given, if there's no charge for something, then you're the product. You're the one that's being manipulated. And that's, I think that when you watch that and you realize, like, oh man, we've already been duped. This has become the quote unquote norm, and it's going to be very hard for people to wake up from that. It's like a sleeping giant or sleeping dragon of like, hey, you got to wake up, you know, cause this stuff is happening. I wake up and I tell my wife, sometimes I wake up and feel like it's upside down world and I'm just waking up into a nightmare. And I want to wake up that morning and say, you know, wake up to that beautiful dream that I used to have. And so what you're saying does resonate with me completely.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's past time that people woke up.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's,
yeah. We're,
you know, the people aren't asleep anymore. They're in a coma.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. It's been long enough. Right. So. Yeah, your book, I liked what you said earlier when you said you're punching back. I love that, how you
you're
said.
You're fighting. Yep.
Yeah, you know, you've been attacked personally, and now you're punching back, and now you're going to help. Now you're going to help the masses, just like Satan and the demons. You know, they attack the masses, and they use whatever they can. Now you're punching back, and you're going to help the masses wake up and have a game plan and be aware. Just awareness is the first step, like you said.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. You know, it's like I've been attacked enough. It's time to attack back, and it's also time for other believers to, you know, to rise up and attack back. It's, you know, the time for being nice is over. There was a time for nice, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm. Have you had any family members or friends been attacked at all, or, you know, have something that they can't explain?
No, just me. I'm the lucky one.
Yeah, you're the lucky.
Lucky you. You're the winner.
Yeah. Go me. Yeah, I'm the only family member in my family that's a believer, or, you know, functioning at a, you know, in a ministry at a high level, and that's why I experience the things I experience.
Okay, I just thought maybe, yeah, just because you've been attacked, and then maybe because, you know, to hurt you more is to hurt your family or friends, and, you know,
No, I'm not. I'm sure they're not going to take that off the table.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Gosh. You know, but I have definitely paid my dues so far. I think I'm just getting started, but right after I finished the very first manuscript that night, I was in a almost life-ending car accident.
Oh, wow.
I don't think there was any coincidence in that.
No. Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't believe in coincidences.
Right. And I mean, I literally just put the last dot and last, you know, crossed the last T. And that evening, you know, I almost, you know, died. Someone ran a red light and totaled my car. And witnesses said that should have never walked away from that. So I consider that a miraculous event. But but yeah, I'm paying my dues for this.
Gosh, I think that what it and I'll be honest, I'm just going to speak very honestly. It scares me. Like, I was excited to talk about this, but I know that this is like a really scary situation and serious topic. And so when you're telling it, you're not like beating around the bush, which I think is a good thing. And you speak with authority, which is also very is just awesome, because like I'm coming at it from like, I want to know more about it. I want to understand, but there's a fear and you're like, look, you got to blow through that. Like that's, we don't have time for that. Right. And I think that's, that in itself is amazing. And I also like that leads me to thinking about like, what is your, how do you fight these kind of forces? What is it you use? Obviously, you know, the name of Jesus and that kind of authority, but do you have a favorite scripture or a way that you pray, or how do you protect yourself from these attacks? And I know sometimes you just can't, they're going to come, but how do you find that kind of comfort in the scripture and your own belief?
Can you ask the question again?
I certainly can. I know I tend to be very tangential and I beat around the bush with that question, didn't I? Do you have a favorite scripture or way that you like to, that you feel that you combat these evil forces? How do you protect yourself?
Oh yeah. Well, as a believer, you are equipped with some very, very powerful weapons.
Yes.
Now, God, Jesus, he knew that we would be dealing with a very formidable foe, and he has not left us without weapons. And so he said, I give you authority over all the power of the enemy, and to trample on snakes and scorpions, and they will no wise hurt you. And I'm mangling the scripture, but the essence is that he himself has given us the authority through his name to bind up or to shackle demonic powers and to take authority over them, which is an amazing thing, because when you think about how powerful the demonic and demons are, to give this type of power to mere humanity is just an incredible thing, because the demons, you got to remember, these are fallen angels. These were spiritual, supernatural creatures, beings that inhabited heaven, that inhabited in the very presence of God himself. And they are equipped with, you know, high intelligence, supernatural power. They can transform themselves into any kind of form they want. Whether it be a deceased grandmother or child or anything of that nature, they can transform into any kind of being they want. So they have this supernatural power, can, you know, show up at will and wherever they want, right? And so we're talking about a very, very high level of intelligence,
right,
and power and strength. But Jesus says, I'm giving you power over that. It's an incredible thing.
It's kind of unbelievable, but it's true. Like you said, it is true. You know, you think a human cannot ever even attempt to fight back or have power over a demon, but God says it's so. So got to go after it.
Well, it's an amazing thing, and if you wield that power, now I'm talking about, this isn't just given to anybody. Like, this isn't for anybody, because in the Bible, someone tried to exercise or expel a demon in the name of Jesus, whom Paul preaches, meaning that they had no faith in it or belief in it whatsoever.
Right.
They just tried to use the name of Jesus,
right,
and then they got torn to ribbons, these guys.
Right.
And so they're like, who are you? Paul I know, Jesus I know, but who are you?
Right.
So this is something specifically given to the believer. And this is the power that needs to be wielded and understood. And when these entities and these demonic things come, it's an amazing thing, to be able to call out on the name of Christ and watch these things, they almost like disappear like mist.
Right.
Wow, it's an amazing, amazing thing. Yeah, it is. It's a crazy thing.
That's what I was going to ask you. Do you have, like, have you seen exorcisms? And this is, that's how I think about it from at least a Catholic viewpoint of, like, being exorcising a demon or exorcising a dark entity. You've seen that then. You've seen people possessed and being able to turn that around or get rid of that kind of a presence.
Are you talking about exorcism?
Yeah, well, that was my question, is have you seen an exorcism before? But
that takes from what I understand. Now, I've never given an exorcism.
Right.
But there is a process to that, and there is, like, you know, I don't believe in the Catholic version you know, holy water and you know, and things of that nature. What you see in movies or in The Exorcist or things like that, that makes for great film.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Hollywood, right?
Yeah. But if you get a Christian minister, a minister, pastor, someone with real authority, I'm not talking about these TV people.
The evangelist.
I'm talking a man of God with real authority. And they go into a situation. Now, it might take some time, but it's not going to last months, you know, because some of these Catholic exorcism, I was like, why are they taking so long to exorcise this guy's, demon?
That is a great, see, that was another question I had, is does it have to take long periods of time, or shouldn't it be something that's quicker? So, yeah, it's interesting you say it like that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, well, Jesus has given us the same power that he had. Well, then they should come out rather quickly. Again, right. I've never given one, and from my understanding, there is a process to it. Sometimes it does take time, but not months or weeks.
Sure.
When Jesus exorcised devils, basically all he said was, "Come out of the man."
Right. Yeah.
Who are you? Get out of here.
Yep.
So he didn't have these long, extended bouts with the devil. It was, you know, he just kicked ass and took names.
Exactly. Hit the road, Jack, you know. Right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and MR, I'm glad you said that because, like you said, he's giving us the same authority. I mean, we're humans, but if we have the same authority, yeah, it's not going to take 6 months, a year, or
you know,
50 times to get this demon out of there or whatever. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, and speaking of that story, I mean, it wasn't even just one demon. So people can be possessed by multiple. And in this guy's case, at the Sea of at the Gadarenes, when Jesus came across the sea and he was met by this demoniac, and Jesus said, what is your name? And he says, Legion, for we are many.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then. Then Jesus casts the demons out of the man and into the herd of pigs.
Yep.
And which ran down the hill and then, you know, drowned themselves in the water. But when you think about it, a legion at that time, like a Roman legion, was about 2,000, numbered up to like 2,000. So we're talking that this man was, it could have been up to 2,000 devils in this man that were cast out into this, you know, herd of swine.
That's wild.
So
Todd's getting goosebumps over here.
Demonized by multiple demons.
MR, are you talking like that? Todd's showing us that he's getting like goosebumps on his arm. I am too.
MR, you know. I got baptized 16 years ago this coming September 11th, and I work at a Christian church. I've been there, you know, almost 16 years. Heard the story, you know, the Bible lesson, and just hearing you say that again just gives me goosebumps. Like, oh man, that's a lot of demons. That's a lot of devils in one man.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, he's a son of God, and you know, he had this incredible authority. But we have that authority, and
right.
It's high time that the church wake up, because a lot of churches just buried their head in the sand towards, you know, the demonic, and we don't want to talk about that because it's negative. And things of that nature. I was like, yeah, well, you keep thinking it's negative while the devil works in your church and, you know, you have no power over it, right? So it's, and this is one of the things I hope to actually wake up, you know, believers with the book as well. That's why I'm hoping that the the churches and stuff catch on to this book, in order to equip them so they can understand and see how the demonic realm works and the power that they have over it.
Sure, absolutely. Well, we appreciate that.
Oh my gosh, you know, yeah. It's,
you doing that.
I think I'm just getting surprised about, I didn't know exactly how this conversation was going to go, but I'm kind of floored, you know, by some things we're talking about, but I think it's also, it's what, like you're saying, it's what we need to hear, you know, these kind of things. We need to have these discussions in this platform that we have here. One thing that we try to show, the highlight and showcase is that mental health and the importance of mental health and make this a community for people that are looking for help. And one of the things that I think we overlook in mental health, with especially all this COVID stuff, we're coming out of it. Like, mental health is so important, but like people, you know, like you're saying, like, oh, we just want to, you know, make it sound like very scientific and normal. But these are not normal things that people are wrestling with. And I do believe that it goes into demonic presences in us, causing us to have these manifestations that come out as mental disorders.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, glad you brought that up because I do talk about that. I do believe there's a place for psychiatry. I do believe there's a place for psychiatrics and that field.
Yes.
But this is beyond that. And so there is a place for it. So it's like, you know, I think that people immediately want to tag you with the scarlet letter of crazy. Whatever it is, anything but the demonic. But one of the reasons why I wrote this book is that, you know, there's a place for that, but with so many instances of people being on these pharmaceuticals and they're saying, I'm hearing voices. And these are examples in the book. I'm hearing voices, and the voices told me to kill. And I couldn't stop the voices, so I killed, right? And this is like a story of a 12-year-old kid who killed his grandparents. And I use that as an example in the book. And so there is a place for that. But if people are saying they're hearing voices, they're being compelled to do things or driven to do things unnatural to themselves, and they say things like, if somebody else was telling me to do it and things of that nature, it's time to stop thinking that they're crazy and start thinking about they might possibly be influenced by evil.
Sure.
Yeah, very true.
Yep.
I think it's also where it's easy to label them as crazy.
And dismiss them, right?
And dismiss them because it's their issue, it's their problem. Because if they acknowledge that it's a real presence of a demon or you know, whatever, that means it could happen to them, and that doesn't sound good. So I think that's a lot of it.
And then they have to deal with it, right?
And then they'd have to deal with it, and so let's just dismiss it as just it's your mental problem. You know, you're crazy, you're making it up, because I don't have to be scared of it. That means, you know, if I don't acknowledge it, right. I think that's a part of it, you know.
Right.
It's
well, you know the story of the woman who drowned her five kids in the lake. She basically just, you know, released the parking brake with the kids in the car.
I
think it was in Texas. I wrote about a book, but I think it's in Texas. And she was saying to her friend, and in the court testimony, she said that the woman, I can't think of her name right now, she said, do you believe in the devil? Do you believe there's a Satan? And they were like, well, no, why? Because I'm hearing these voices, you know, I'm hearing these voices. And so I think she confided that to a friend or to a psychiatrist or whatever. And that was actually written in like the court transcript, is that this woman was believed she was hearing the voice of Satan.
Oh, wow.
Man.
And she very well could have been.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was dismissed and just put on medication.
Mm. And then see what happened. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the proper treatment for that case.
The problem is that they're trying to remedy and heal a spiritual condition with natural means.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not going to work ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a body, mind, spirit connection there, and there you're right. You're only putting focus on one area there, and not on the holistic approach, right?
Right. And they're delving into a field they know nothing about.
Yep. Right.
Man.
Into a realm they know nothing about.
Right.
So,
MR, I want to make sure and ask you. We can't tell you how much we appreciate your time here, so I feel like we could talk to you forever and ever.
Oh, yeah.
The one thing I want to ask you is, I know we're talking about all the darkness and the demons, but what is your view on angels? Like, do people ask you much about your feelings on angels and how they help in the world and where they come into this equation?
Can you ask the question again?
Sure.
Up a little bit.
Of course, yeah. The subject of angels. I know we're talking about a lot of
angels. Oh yeah. So just as there is a demonic realm, there's demons. There are angels. It just so happens that the demons are one third of the angels that fell in Satan's rebellion in heaven. Oh, and just to clarify something real quick, and then I'll answer your question. Satan's name is Lucifer, and he was the chief or the greatest, most beautiful creation that God ever created in heaven.
Right.
He had very high authority and was thought to be considered to be the musical director of the heavenly choir, so to say. And so when he fell. When Lucifer fell, he became Satan. Satan actually means deceiver or adversary. And so Satan is his title. Lucifer is his name.
Right.
Yeah.
And right. So I don't know why I just wanted to clarify.
No, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, that's good.
No,
yeah, that's a good point.
But when it comes to the angels, there, according to the Bible, there is more for us than against. There's more for us in the angelic realm than there are demons. And when to talk like the angels come and they're not mighty. Okay, they're not little babies with wings.
Right, little cherubs.
I just want to clear that up right now.
Right.
The angels are actually a military force.
Right.
And there are no women angels in the Bible. So we're talking about a very masculine, warlike culture who have more power than demons because they still live, in the presence of God, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so this is a warring culture. We have to get out of the mindset that these angels are sweet beings and sweet babies, mm-hmm. because when people in the Bible saw them, they fell on their face like they were dead.
Right.
And then the angel would say, get up, don't worship me. Mm. Right?
Right.
And they'd have to strengthen them because they literally lost their shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
It's a good way to put it.
That is. No better way to put it, right?
Right.
I mean, just to put it in like kind of our terminology, but like, literally they fell down like powerless, and so we're talking about some highly powerful, masculine, warlike beings. Mm. And this is what's on our side, mm-hmm. not baby angels, not baby cherubim, not women spirits or anything of that nature. We're talking about a militant supernatural beings that are on our side.
Yep.
So that in itself also should give us a feeling of hope. Absolutely. As well, and that there's a good force on our side. So that's an excellent thing.
Sense of power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's about support. You know, when Jesus said, when he could have had 10,000 angels just to help him when and he's not going to bring he's not going to bring the little cute little soft cuddly angels. I mean, he's bringing the boy. They're coming, and it's but he didn't obviously, but he could have. Yeah, he's not bringing just the sweet little like cherub looking things. Yeah, he's bringing the like you said, the militant. They're ready to go. They're it's an army.
I mean, if we can look at And even the image of Jesus has been, you know, misconstrued, you know, because you think of him as this weakling pacifist.
Oh, no.
And, you know, and there is a time for peace and passivity, but that's not all who Jesus was, because in Revelation 19, he's a warmongering Viking-like king.
Right.
Yep.
With many crowns on his head, eyes filled with fire, which means he's mad as hell, he's angered, and he comes back and he crushes people under his feet, and it says his robes are stained with the blood of his enemies. This is not a man who's coming to sit down on Oprah's couch and discuss things away.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
He's
right.
Brute force to kill and take judgment on all who have opposed him. And his blood, literally Jesus himself, is a killing machine. So this is a concept that needs to be reintroduced into the churches, because, you know, if you keep perpetuating a weak Jesus, you're going to have a weak believer, you're going to have a weak congregation. I don't want a weak Jesus. I need a killing machine.
I agree.
And this is the Jesus of Revelation.
I agree. You know, and
I've never heard it put like that.
I know. I your viewpoints are very. That's why I'm just letting you talk with that stuff, because it's very, very interesting. And I haven't thought like that either. And it is. That's a great message.
He's the same one that would have a child on his knee, and, you know, being sweet. But he's all, you're like you said. But he's also the same one that's going to kick your.
Right.
He's not right. He's a machine. He's a killing machine. He's a
Right.
A butt kicker.
These images are all false images of who Jesus is. I mean, I don't know who painted these things. Mostly, I don't know where they got their, you know, their imagery for who Jesus was. There's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's a lot of misconceptions about who the devils and demons are.
Right.
And, you know, like Satan himself is not a man in red tights with a pitchfork, and he's not reigning in hell at the moment.
Yeah.
And neither will he be, because that was a place of judgment created by God for evil and rebellious spirits, human and inhuman. And he's not a hairy, horned creature. He's the most beautiful being God ever created.
Right.
And so each of these instances, Satan's image needs to be reconsidered. And the image of Jesus needs to be absolutely reconsidered.
Yep, I agree.
And that's what I talk about in the book as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. MR, I'm glad you brought that up, you know.
I was going to ask what, like, kind of to piece it all together, what your best piece of advice was going to be, and, like, your with all your expertise. And I was thinking, like, I think you just put it perfectly with all that.
Yeah.
Really. I'm blown away a little bit.
It needed to be said, like you said. It did. I'm glad you said that the way you did.
Yeah, I mean, both of these images have just been so grossly misrepresented, mm-hmm. you know, somehow, you know, and everything you see in every movie you see, you always see Jesus as this wimpy kind of, you know, flowy guy, and you know, he's. I think Hinduism has crept into this, because Jesus wasn't that pacifist. He says, "You know, go sell your garment and buy a sword."
Yeah.
Yep. That's right.
I didn't come to bring peace on the earth. I came to bring a sword.
Yep.
How's that fit into your theology? Right.
Like, right.
Sure. Sean, what?
That's so much. Go ahead. That's so much to think about. Like, that's what I said. I'm. I didn't know how this was all going to go and what kind of information we were going to get. And it's overwhelming, but it's in a good way. It kind of shakes you up a little bit.
And I think the demons count. Sorry, I didn't mean
that. No, you're fine.
I think the demons count on that as far as our opinion or how we look at Jesus. I think they count on that,
sure.
You know, and then how it all just comes together. And then, that's kind of how they can win, I guess, a battle or a soul or whatever. It's, you know.
Well, again, if you have a weak image of Jesus, or, you know, and, you know, let's say, like, men are not going to follow this flowery, flowy, goat-holding, you know, lamb-carrying guy.
Right.
Right?
Right, yeah.
Like, men are going to follow a battle-hardened warrior.
Right.
into whatever battle I could, you know, like Patton.
Yeah,
Patton would have had anybody follow that man into war, right?
Right, yeah, right.
I agree. You know,
So men will follow a masculine warlike warrior into any battle. And if we have a weak image of Jesus, we think we're following a weak guy. We'll have a weak faith. We'll have everything around. We'll have a weak faith. It'll just be weak and not to the point where, not to the level where it needs to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh. Yeah, I think, I can't remember there was a series. It was it was a remake of a 70s movie or 70s series, Salem's Lot. I don't know if you've seen Salem's Lot back from the 70s, and they remade it in early 2000s. And I hadn't seen the original in a while, but I was watching that, and the head vampire, you know, was coming for the priest, and the priest holds up his cross, and he just laughed at him because he goes, "The cross doesn't defeat me, your faith does. You know, you can give me basically, you know, you can give me any emblem you want, and I'm just gonna laugh at it." You know, he's like, "What's inside you?" You know, and that priest did not have, because his faith wasn't strong, it wasn't real. It was, he just thought his faith, if he just shows up a cross, holds up a cross, so that's gonna steer him away. And he was just and I just remember, like, that's how we need to look at it in our real faith. Like, how big is our God? How big is our Jesus? How strong are they? You know, and then move on from there. Not an emblem or a little rosary bead, or I'm not trying to dog on the Catholics, but
in that instance, I mean, you know, it's just a trinket,
right?
Like, you know, you can't hold up a cross and demons will go away. You can't burn sage and cedar and whatever else. You can't. That's not what makes demons go away.
Right.
What makes demons go away is the authority given to the believer by Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. I mean, I could, you know, if my faith, I hope so, but, you know, if I hold up a pencil, but my faith inside my heart, inside me, you know, given to me from Christ, that should, you know, that's, you know, it's not the emblem. I just might as well hold up a pencil, but it's what they see inside me and who I worship and who I count on my strength. That's going to win it. Not just like you said, a little trinket, you know. So I just thought I remembered that from the series, and I thought, man, you know, here it is, a priest, but his faith wasn't strong.
Yeah.
So he holds up a cross, did nothing, you know. So I mean, it's all obviously fiction, but still, it's a good message, you know. It rings true.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, MR, is there anything else you want to share with the listeners, you know, about the book or whatever before we wrap it up? We've loved this interview, by the way.
There were things that we didn't touch on. The book also includes the first fully recorded eyewitness account of demonic possession in American history, and that was recorded, you know, decades before the Salem witch trials. So that's an absolutely fascinating read, where it's a story took place between a minister and a 16-year-old maid, and the experiences that started happening in his household. He began to keep a journal every day of the things and the bizarre things that started happening to his maid. So it's the first fully recorded account in American history. So you definitely want to give that a read, and as well as some of my own very personal experiences that are in the book.
That part of it too, because you said you've been a writer for a long, long time, and you can tell, but I don't know how much studying you would have had to do into that language, because you hit it perfectly to talk, like, it's almost like it's happening right in front of your eyes. I can see it and feel it. It is written, and I'm not trying to just toot your horn, but it is written perfectly. And how much studying would have gone into that?
I had to research back 350 years. I really did extreme research, so to say. And, you know, I literally got my hands on 350-year-old parchments, journals, and records. You know, these things were very fragile and written in black flowing script, 350 years old. So when you talk about research, I really... I did a massive amount of research in order to make this story come alive.
Yeah.
And hopefully that really is demonstrated by the story in the book.
Yeah, when you were telling that, Sean gave me two thumbs up.
I did, yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to make sure and say that before we ended here too, because it is. I want to thank you for writing this book. I'm still going through it and you know, making my way through it, but it is really good. And especially now hearing from you, I had listened to some of your interviews, but I didn't want to like taint, you know, what we were going to talk about.
Sure.
So it's getting your viewpoint makes it even more special to read the words that you wrote. And so I appreciate you writing this book very much so.
Thank you. Well, it's my pleasure to put that out there, and I'm just, you know, hoping it really connects with readers. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to have people who understand, and I'm going to have people who don't understand, and, you know, because we're talking about very, very deep spiritual concepts here,
mm-hmm.
Are not readily understood, you know?
You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Correct. Well, MR, his book is Demons Among Us. Do you want to tell the listeners how they can get, you know, they can follow you on social media or whatever you want to tell them?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can get the book, Demons Among Us, on Amazon. It's actually the Amazon's number one new release in 10 haunting categories.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That was, you know, Ghosts and Hauntings, Unexplained Mysteries, and 8 more. And you can find me at on Instagram at m.r.gorga and on Facebook at mrgorga.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming on. It's fascinating, you know, just unfortunately you've had to go through that stuff, but you know, I thank you for just your personal war on, you know, on the demonic,
right.
And
right.
Like you said, punching back and helping make people and churches aware of this real deal stuff, you know, that's kind of getting swept under the rug at times and not dealt with properly. So I appreciate it personally. Yeah. And I know Nate and Sean.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Truly. Thank you very much.
We're just so excited to have you on the show, and it was awesome. You did a great job, and we learned a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
You know, so. Thank you. I hope it comes out good.
It'll.
And,
oh yeah.
You know, we put it together good, you know?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Well, sometime we'll have you on again if you like. You know, like I said, you're a great interview, and like I said, the book. I don't know. Do you have any, real quick before we let you go, do you have any books planned in the future or anything?
Yeah, right now I'm working on a couple things. I'm working on a story. It's a fiction story. It takes place in about the 1650s, and I can't give all the beans away, but uh-huh. This woman turns to the dark side and all kinds of stuff happens. So it's a very, you know, supernatural book as well. And I'm working on a screenplay at the moment, very excited about.
Very cool.
And this is about a specific trial. Again, I keep my ideas very close to the breast.
Sure, yeah.
But just know that they're going to be, you know, supernatural and, you know, epic supernatural stories. Yeah.
Very, very cool. That's exciting.
Man, that is awesome.
Yeah. It really sounds cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir, for coming on again. And, I know we'll be, you know, following you on social media and messaging back and forth. So.
Yeah. Anytime.
Yeah.
Just, reach out to me, via Instagram, call, whatever, email, just get in touch and, I'll be glad to come back on.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, MR.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're all welcome. Right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
So, guys, that was MR Gorga. And so what'd you think? Pretty intense?
Intense is a very light way to put it, honestly.
Yeah.
More than intense.
It was awesome, yeah. Like I said, we learned a lot. And
definitely changes your viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I was humble.
A lot of things.
Like, humbling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was speechless, so that's why I kept trying to like let him just do his thing because he
right,
was
tell real,
his
story.
He mm-hmm. had such good insights and ways I've never even thought of thinking about some of the stuff that we talked about. So I don't know. I know you guys are going to enjoy it. I think everybody's going to get a lot of good insights from it. So I hope everybody enjoys it. And I just appreciate that MR was with us.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Appreciate his time.
Yeah,
and, yeah, and go get his book, Demons Among Us.
I love it. Yep,
Sean's got it, and yeah. So I hope to get it sometime and. Like I said, it's just hard for me to find time to read, but that'd be one of the books I'm going to.
No excuses.
Do. No excuses. No, but yeah. So thanks, MR. And that was great. I hope you listeners enjoyed it. I know we did. And so we are going to move on to the middle-aged moment.
Before the middle-aged. Yeah, the middle-aged moment is something I have something that's very close to my heart. But I wanted to tell a couple stories because I didn't want to interrupt MR and I didn't want to put this at the beginning. So. The first one I'm going to start with was a very personal one. We've talked a lot about my different out-of-body experiences, and I'm getting more and more comfortable talking about them. So there was one, and it was during COVID, so it was within this last year. I had one where I left my body, and before I did, it was almost like a very natural just being able to pop out. And in my mind, I thought, oh, here I go again. You know, I'm out. And I was in space, and so in my mind, for whatever reason, because I don't think this way when I'm in this body, but when I was out there, I was like, oh, good, I get to explore. Well, what am I exploring out there? I have no idea. But my first thought was I was kind of leaving the planet, or at least I felt like I was out in space, and I got enough wherewithal to think, I want to look at the Earth. So I want to turn around and look at the Earth before I go. And so I did. I turned around because I'm like, all those, the flat earthers and all that kind of stuff. I want to prove to myself like it's, you know, it's a beautiful round globe and just see what it looks like. I turned around and I kid you not, it was shrouded. I couldn't see it. It was shrouded in a cloud of like darkness and dust and gray and black. And all in my heart, it was like my soul. Cause I feel like, you know, I can't quite keep up with, you know, that level of thinking, but it felt like my soul was saying to me, there's a lot of work still to be done there. And so like this episode and talking about all the demons and the powers that be and the darkness that's upon us, I was like, I saw it. I like from another realm, it seems like, but it was like, yeah, there's a lot of work to be done. And then I kind of brightened up and like, okay, I'm going to go explore. And I went through what felt like dimensional portals and all this kind of stuff. And I felt like I was surrounded by loved ones and angels and just goodness. You know, I was trying to ask MR about like, you know, what is it that protects us and what feels right? And how do you know you're not, you know, mixed in with the wrong crowd kind of? And to me, it felt good and it feels heart-centered. It feels like, it doesn't feel like trickery. It just felt like, okay, you know, kind of like there's messages that are trying to be shared with me, but it's so high level, I can't quite keep up with it all. So I just enjoyed that experience. But the most striking part of that was it felt like I was gone for hours, if not days. And then when it was, I start thinking like, what if I can't get back? You know, maybe I need to go back. And as soon as I thought that, I came back into my body. But what impressed me, besides the fact that it's such an amazing experience, is looking back at the Earth and seeing that darkness and knowing that there is a dark presence on this Earth. And like I said, that still is sticking with me. And so like talking about those things it really hits close to home. The other thing we were talking about with him, and we've actually talked about a couple times, is Ouija boards. And I have a good story that I was a very, very young. My grandfather, it was my dad's dad. He was in World War II. He was a boxer. He worked on the railroad. He was a man's man, tough. You know, he ate whatever he wanted. If somebody picked a fight with him, he would fight him. You know, he wasn't afraid of anything. And this is in my perception. So as he got older, he had a stroke, which sometime I'll tell you that story. There's a whole story behind that. It's really amazing. He had a stroke and that really changed him. That got his attention. And he actually became, after that, he became a lot more religious minded. He became saved, like truly saved. Like before he thought, oh, you know, I believe in God. But it truly transformed him. And so he was very inspirational to me when I was younger. He's part of why, when he died when I was 15, and that's, I've told you guys I wanted to be a minister. It was because he actually did go and get his certification to be a minister, and he went and preached in a couple of churches. He wasn't a pastor per se in any church, but he loved to talk to people about God and Jesus and being saved. And when I was a kid, he used to send me to like take tracts to people and you know, share God's word. And I remember that very, very much. So he was a deep, deep man of faith. But when he was still kind of trying to figure out the spiritual realm, he had an Ouija board. I don't know, remember how he came across it or whatever, but he thought it was really cool to try to figure out how this thing worked. And I mean, he was just beginning to understand like the light side. And but he was with my brother, which if we ever get Chad on here, he can tell us his perception of this too. But I remember that it was just my brother and my grandfather at the home that they were in when I was a kid. And they had this Ouija board out and he was showing Chad how it works and asking it questions. And apparently the curtains started shaking and there was a voice that said, I want your soul. And like the little thing kept going all over the place. And my brother thought, and he was young too, but he said he thought my grandfather was doing all this stuff and was trying to play a trick on him. And he was, my grandfather was, I remember him telling this story too, after he was so got by that, he took the board out in the backyard and broke it over his knee and said, that thing is of the devil. I'm never going to touch one of those things again. And he didn't. But, so that impressed upon me. I have, when I was younger, we played with them a little bit, but I always had this respect of, whoa, you know, there's something not quite right there. I mean, you can buy one at any of your, the local stores, but I think it's important to know what you're dealing with when you're dealing with that kind of, yeah, those dark arts. It's just not a kid's game, but, and I know that, for Jerry and Hillbilly Horror Stories and his, I'm reading his book. And he has a great story about a Ouija board and how that has, you know, that really turned him off of Ouija boards with his. If we ever get him to tell that story, or
you know, and he's a genuine guy. I believe him.
Oh, I do too.
Because when I always say, like, I'm 50-50 on it, he's the 50 I believe.
Right.
You know, I just don't know if every time I believe.
Well, he's even he approaches his story with saying, like, I'm just telling you, this is exactly, you know, I'm not told this before. It's really been a long time for me to tell
it. Into ownership of a Ouija board.
Did you?
When I was in high school.
Yeah.
Never used it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, no.
You didn't believe in it, or you believed in it too much?
I was scared of getting in contact with something I could not control turn off.
Yeah.
And that scared me enough. I was like, you know, I'm just not going to mess with this.
Well, it's like I said, my grandfather was trying to figure out his own spirituality, and maybe I know he took it very seriously, but he was, my grandmother had gotten him to go see a psychic somewhere around the same time. I was very young during this too. And it's funny because my grandfather had gone to see the psychic. He was kind of like, I don't know, this, you know, is probably hocus pocus. I don't believe in it. But my grandmother wanted to just see what this psychic would say. I don't think she said anything extraordinarily wonderful. But within, I think it was a few days or maybe the next week, my grandfather was going through an intersection, and this lady, the psychic, stepped out in front of them, and he almost ran over her. Oh. And his joke to my grandma was, how come she didn't see that coming? You know, like,
yeah, right.
So it was just funny like I said, those kind of things impress upon me. Like, that's still just, you know, there's things out there that we don't completely understand, but those dark arts they're kind of rough. So, yep. But I wanted to share both of those. And then that leads into the middle-aged moment. My grandfather, I remember him. He was a very stoic man. He was very, very funny though. He had a wonderful sense of humor, but one of his things he liked to do was sing. He'd just kind of go around and sing. I find myself doing that every once in a while too, but his favorite hymn was Mansion Over the Hilltop. And so I wanted to kind of relate that story to you, and I won't sing the whole thing or talk about the whole thing, but just kind of go over it. But I think it really is poignant with all the things that we've been talking about in this interview. So it says, in 1945, a young Christian businessman stood one evening in an evangelistic service in Dallas, Texas, and told how he had learned a valuable lesson from a small child. The gentleman stated that his business for a number of months had been in a steady decline. It looked as if it would completely fail. Since the situation seemed beyond his ability to understand or control, he found himself slipping into despondency, discouragement, and feelings of despair. He related how one day, for a period of diversion and relaxation, he decided to get into his car and drive out into the countryside. He traveled for miles out beyond the busy streets and residential areas. He stopped his car on a lonely road and continued on foot. Soon he found himself on a deserted, out-of-the-way trail, where eventually he came upon a dilapidated cottage. It was in great disrepair, with some of the windows replaced with cardboard. Out front was a young girl playing with a doll. Although the stuffing in the doll was protruding in several places, the child seemed to be content and happy. He approached the front yard, keeping his distance for fear of frightening the child, and asked, "Little girl, would you tell me how you can be happy living in such a house? It is broken down, and the windows are out in several places. The doll you have in your hands is broken, with the stuffing coming out of it. How can you be happy?" The little girl looked up with a smiling face and gesturing hand and said, "Mister, my daddy just came into a lot of money, and he is building us a brand new mansion just over the hilltop." The young businessman testified those words that pierced his heart. He realized for the first time that though his earthly business was faltering, the Heavenly Father had greater things in store for him, It was as though he heard God saying, "Son, don't you know that I have a mansion prepared for you just beyond those clouds?" The young businessman concluded his story by telling how he went back home with a new determination to live for God and let the Heavenly Father take care of the business. Ira Stanfill, the famed songwriter, was in the audience that evening. He was so moved with the story, he went home, still thinking about what he had heard. He rose early the next morning, went to his piano, and wrote the song, Mansion Over the Hilltop. So part of this, and I can hear my, it's hard because I hear my grandfather singing it right now, but it says, I'm satisfied with just a cottage below, a little silver and a little gold. But in the city where the ransomed will shine, I want a gold one that's silver lined. And it's like, I've got a mansion just over the hilltop in the bright land where we shall never grow old. And someday yonder we will never more wander, but walk on streets that are pure as gold. And I can still feel my grandfather saying that. Like he would not approve of me not singing that part. Right. So,
no, I like it.
And there's a lot more to that mm-hmm. song. But I think with all that darkness we just talked about, and we also touched with some angelic talk too, which was helpful for me because it's a lot of darkness to talk about, is to lighten it up. We talk about in these middle-aged moments of trying to make sure there's that balance between the light and the dark, but that there is promise, there is hope, and we are all part of that journey. So,
and we're
glad to be part of that journey with you. So,
mm-hmm. Thanks for sharing that.
My gosh, no problem. So, I love that. I love those times, and that one, like I said, that spoke very, very close to my heart. So.
Sure.
But we always want to tell you guys how much we appreciate you listening and being part of the Mako family. We want you to be able to always email us at makopodcast@gmail.com for stories and any kind of questions that you have or concerns, for merch, of course, because we do have merch that you can order of all kinds. You can always message us at Facebook or Instagram or email us, like I said, your order. And that's Middle Aged and Creeped Out for Facebook and Instagram. So you can always get a hold of us. We love the interaction there. I mean, it's really, really fun to see that.
Keep it up.
Keep it up, yeah. Subscribe, review, do all those kind of things too, though. We love to hear, you know, that really does help propel our podcast, and we kind of forget to tell that sometimes, but if you got a minute, please review. Those mean a lot to us.
And make sure if you're a loyal listener, make sure you subscribed, because I went to dinner with a friend of mine. I won't mention his name, Jim.
Jim. We love you, Jim.
And he actually was not a subscriber. He's listened to the episodes. I don't know if he's fully caught up, but he's a listener, but he didn't know how to subscribe. So I showed him, but
right.
So that helps us as well. Subscribe to the podcast, not just pull it up and, you know.
I think on some platforms it's follow.
It's follow. And that's what I was telling.
Follow, yep. Subscribe,
following.
Yeah, follow,
subscribe. Yeah, actually, the iTunes, they when I got our new phone, they changed it. Now when you tap it, it says followed instead of subscribed. Okay. But anyway, he wasn't a subscriber or follower.
And to be fair, I wouldn't know, until we started podcasting, I didn't do that with a lot of the ones I listened to, and no, I didn't know how big
like
of a deal.
You.
It's true. And so now I'm knowledgeable.
I'm kidding.
Right?
No, but yeah. So
it is people like me.
And just
hey, we're happy when people can find us.
I know. Just, take that extra minute, rate and review, and, you know, you can say whatever you want, as old as you want. That review helps us regardless of what, if you say we suck or we're the best.
It really does.
Review.
We are on all the major listening platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, any way you want to listen to us. And there's a countless number more. So please find us out there, and we appreciate when you do. We always, this is about the one aspect that we want to always hammer home is the importance of mental health. And we are part of that community as well, not just talking about the fun, creepy stuff. And unusual. We want to talk about how important your mental health is and all of ours and how we are a community. And so we always want to give out some helplines. The Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline is 1-800-662-4357. The last four on that is HELP. And the National Prevention of Suicide Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255. The last four on that is TALK.
Thank you, sir. And before Nate gives us the... you know, his little, yeah.
His words.
His verbiage. Words. I just want to say be an advocate for yourself, for your mental health. And I am for myself, but I fail. I'm trying to get, I'm still trying to get better to, you know what I'm saying? Make sure you take care of yourself, because nobody, I mean, really, it comes down to yourself.
No, I agree. You owe totally agree.
You know, don't let yourself just be miserable and unhappy, and not that it cures it right away if you have counseling or medication or whatever you do to better it, but it's still, just be your best advocate, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think we all, and
because it spills over into your family and friends.
And the scariest part is, you know, is that it can really take a hold quickly. Like, I'm always, you know, I might have a day where I don't do everything that's supposed, you know, that's good for me. And then I think, well, tomorrow I'll do better. And then I might have a couple of days where I'm like not doing the things that I need to do, you know, eat well or exercise or take good care of myself. And then those kind of start getting ahead of you. And all of a sudden it can be like, oh man. So I know exactly what you mean. And then, but there's deeper and deeper holes that you can get into, and demons that we can wrestle with. So
I
get you.
I just want to say that real quick. Yeah. So,
yeah.
But what do you think?
I think that's a wrap.
There it is.
Yeah.
The words I want to hear.
I love it.
All right. Well, thanks again, guys, for listening to episode 18. And we appreciate you guys as always. And until next time, creepies, Nate is your sound engineer. And we are your hosts, Todd and Sean. And we are middle-aged
and creeped out. Keep it creepy.